to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 323 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Ed Lamb, and my sweaty friend.
Sweet.
I meant got mixed up there. Sweaty. Yeah. I'm going to initially apologise. I don't know if I need to. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out, but it's the hottest day of the year ever in the UK. It's going to be. We've got air conditioning blowing. We've got a fan next to us.
It could be
a bit of background noise, but hopefully you're living in the present, in the moment with us.
Yeah.
With Sean and I.
I feel like I'm sitting in a wind tunnel.
We're not sat in our undies yet, though, are we?
We might be soon. The place that we would normally record this in, there's other people in there. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Because it's actually more like a sweat lodge.
Well, there's about eight people in that little conference room, so that's going to be pretty warm in there. In fact, we should probably check on them periodically just to make sure they're okay.
And make sure they're still alive.
Chuck a bucket of water if they're in suffering panic. But yeah, I'm looking at the levels here. I think we're okay, good sound quality, and we're gathered around the microphone, aren't we?
Yeah, it's
like
just
we actually like each other.
Guys, yeah, it's weird that, isn't it?
And we're talking about tough love today. We did one a couple of weeks ago about getting to terms with your kids leaving the nest and making the most of the moments we have with them and all that stuff. And this is one is about giving them some tough love and booting them out the door.
So
the other end of the spectrum, eh?
Yeah, yeah. And that comes from people that I've been doing work with, which it was a request. This was
a bit of real world experience, So liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. As you may or may not know, all the show notes and links will be in there. Sean's blog post. Sign up for the mailing list as well, and you'll get discount code for the book. You'll get meditation files and alerts, weekly alerts for the show as well. Not too shabby, which you can unsubscribe from at any point. No pressure. It's all GDPR compliant, I think.
Is that right?
I copy and pasted that terms and conditions from somewhere. I'm sure they're fine.
And if you could let us have your bank details and your PIN numbers, that'd
be
fine.
That'd be cool. No pressure. How you been? You okay?
I'm good.
Enjoying the warmth?
Yeah, and the thing that I find really weird is that because of the stuff I do in the Middle East, and it's a lot hotter there than it is here, and I'm thinking, why does it feel so different? And it's because there's no air conditioning.
Ah, well, today there is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that it's air conditioning in the building.
It's more like air being blown around.
I think it's just hot air being wafted around.
Yeah. But when you're over in the Middle East, when you're inside the building, sometimes you have to wear a jumper because it's that cold. And then you step out into 50 degrees outside. It's like crazy.
Yeah, but you were saying you have that constant noise all the time.
Yeah, there's never anywhere that's quiet. Because if you're in the buildings, you get a noise like this. And if you're outside the building, there are these massive fans that are driving the air system. So even outside, it's noisy. And it's hard to find anywhere that's quiet.
Yeah, we should do an episode actually on noise, pollution and the anxiety. There's quite a lot of interesting studies I've read about the anxiety, that constant noise, like living next to a busy road, for example, which that's what led me into that, can bring higher levels of blood pressure and heart disease and stuff. It's really interesting.
But also, living next to a road increases all kinds of respiratory problems and diseases.
All sorts of crazy stuff, but we won't talk about I won't go down that route today. Promise.
Yeah.
So come on, what was your trigger for this episode then?
I've got quite a few and had quite a few clients that have difficult kids to deal with.
Yeah.
And one particularly said to me, could you do a podcast on tough love? Because we've been talking a lot about these ideas, because she's had this realisation in the work that we've done, is that with her son, who has quite a few issues, because she's been in mother role continually and continue trying to protect and support him, is that she's ended up supporting his problem, not him as a person. So he's never actually been able to grow as a person because she's always been there saving him from having to face the consequences of his action.
Constantly. And is it or other situations like it, does it reach a head where enough's enough and you have this realisation?
It depends. In the extreme, I've seen it where a child becomes an adult, but they don't actually face their problems until their parents die.
Wow. Okay.
Because there's no one there to protect them and support them anymore. You know?
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, this, actually, because we know we all rely on people for various things, you know, in our lives. You know, I've got parents that are, obviously, I'm all grown up and moved out, and I haven't had to borrow money from my dad for quite a while, actually. I'm quite proud of myself. Or you. This is pretty good. So I'm doing quite well in that respect, but we still rely on our parents for other things, you know, from just advice to childcare, obviously, grandparents nearby, yeah, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know, when I think about the kind of tough love lessons that my parents dished out to me, you know, it was probably the right kind of level, because I was encouraged to, you know, make my way in life, and, you know, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, on university and all that stuff, which kind of is a gentle push out the door, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
I think that there's something about it's allowing your kid to run along the wall and letting them fall off, because that's the way they've got to learn,
yeah,
rather than keep saying, get off the wall, don't go off the wall, all that kind of stuff. And I think that is really important. You have to allow kids to put themselves in areas that you might think are dangerous, but that's how we learn to how to be safe.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got a lot of friends, obviously, who are in a similar boat to us, with kids similar-ish age. And it's interesting watching them all in their own little parenting styles, and, you know, obviously you can't say, dish out too much advice to another parent, because, you know, they're doing their own thing. But I think I'm pretty good at letting my kids make mistakes and
Your kids bounce and cut their heads open and stuff like that.
Yeah, so yeah, Will in particular, my eldest, was particularly accident prone. Even though Jacob, my younger one, is the one that will tear around a bit more. William has been the one who's been at hospital twice with head injuries, from once he fell into a fireplace, cut his head open, and the other time he fell out of a tree head first onto a pavement from a reasonable height, and that was a couple of years ago. But just last night he was up a tree, not the same tree but a different one, just nearby, much higher than when he fell and injured himself, and he was trying to build like a rope swing, and just gotta let him go, man. You know, I do get that nervy kind of, oh my gosh, how high up is he, that is ridiculous. But I kind of pushed through that, because if he fell, he would have, you know, he would definitely break some bones on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But he wouldn't die, so.
Yeah.
You've got to have a bit of wiggle room there, haven't you?
Yeah.
Let them learn some lessons.
Yeah. And
what about you as a parent? You know, did you have similar kind of things with kiddies, or?
No, I think that I'm quite good at letting kids do what they need to do. And that it's like with Josh, I'd go out and chop wood with Josh, and he'd have his own axe. So
yeah,
he'd have a little axe, and I'd have a big axe, and we'd go and chop wood together.
Yeah.
He'd never cut himself or anything doing that kind of thing. But it's like I did the health and safety bit, explained to him what was going on. You know.
Yeah, there's Bear Grylls, the adventurer extraordinaire, British guy. He talks about that stuff quite a bit in terms of the boundaries he lets his kids have, and he talks about letting them have knives from quite early age as a tool, a useful tool to have as part of your equipment. And he says he always makes sure that their knives are sharp, like really sharp, because
they're actually safer if they're sharp.
Yeah, because he'll respect it more and it will work.
But also, in terms of, if you're trying to cut a piece of wood and you've got a sharp knife, you don't have to use lots of force. If you've got a blunt knife, you use so much force you can slip and then you cut yourself with a knife.
Yeah.
So having a sharp knife actually is better than a blunt knife.
Yeah, yeah, which, you know, is tricky stuff as a parent to let your kid have a really sharp knife for.
But when I was a kid, before we had all the health and safety stuff, everybody had a penknife. Everyone in the class had a penknife.
Just in the pockets as part of
and it was like we were all Boy Scouts and Cubs.
Yeah.
And it was part of your be prepared. You'd have a penknife just in case. They would have a butler on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, I remember having a Swiss Army knife when I was probably 13, 14. I didn't take it everywhere I went in the end, but it was a cheap one, actually. It wasn't one of the official Swiss Army knives. It was like a knockoff one, and the knife wasn't that sharp. So, my dad should have got me a really proper sharp one, you know.
Yeah. But I think that we have to allow kids to experience the world. And when we keep letting them avoid facing the consequence of their action, they never grow as people.
Mm.
There is something at the moment where Most kids don't walk anywhere anymore. You know, we always used to walk to school.
This is obviously something I'm fascinated by. Go on.
But the idea that people are taken in a car just a couple of miles rather than they actually have to walk and do something.
Yeah.
And people don't experience the world. They don't experience how to survive or how to be. And most people now, if there was some kind of disaster and all the electricity went off, people wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
They were just, you know. It's a bit like people can't make sauces anymore in the kitchen unless they're in a packet.
Mm.
You know, people can't make a béarnaise sauce. They have to go and buy one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's because we're losing the skill base.
We've cut ourselves off, haven't we?
Yeah,
I mean, part of the tough love that I've given to Will and the wider community that I live in, which is probably the coolest thing I ever did, was ride him down a busy road, on the road, a six-year-old, every morning for like 6 months. And recorded the process, but no, I wasn't just recording it. I'm trying to teach him and the people that we interact with in their cars or crossing the road every morning that people should be able to get around on a bike safely. You know, the video, which if you've been on my Twitter feed, it's the top of my pinned tweet. You'll see caused quite a stir. You know, around the world when I put it out in the end, which is what I wanted. But yeah, it's kind of tough love for everyone. It's like. Because initially we did get a lot of shocked parents as we rode down the road. Kind of they couldn't believe what was going on. But gradually over time, they kind of learned to expect him, that me and Will and Jacob on the seat behind me would be coming down this road every morning. And they kind of, Rod, kind of forcing their way through or looking really nervous about what to do. They just kind of waited and let us through, like patiently, and gave us a little wave every morning. So, tough love for everyone, I guess.
Yeah.
That's my thinking.
And I think that it's interesting now because we see tough love, and when you read about it, it's always about parents and kids. But there's two other aspects. One is about the tough love that we need to give ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
And the other one is the tough love in terms of crime and punishment.
Yeah.
You know, are prisons getting too soft?
The age old question. Yeah.
You know, do you need to flog them and bash them when they go into prison? You know, what are we doing with that process? And sometimes I think we do lack toughness in that area. And it's because we don't discriminate between people.
Yeah, so it's really complex stuff this. You've worked in the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd bring your kid to work day. Apologies for squeaking in the background, but a bit of tough love going on there. Or needs to. Get them up. It's too complex an issue just to say all prisoners should be denied, you know, a TV or reading material. They should all be just kind of locked up with no natural sunlight for X amount of time.
The issue...
We're all different characters and we're all different personalities, aren't we?
Because one of my things is, and it's not popular with some people when I say it, but I'll say it anyway, is I think that a lot of people that claim benefits should do something for those benefits, so that the community is giving them resources, and that's the love bit.
Yeah.
But the tough bit is they should be giving something back, and that may not mean that they can go down a coal mine, I'm not saying that, but even if it's like 2 or 3 hours a day, doing something for the community, paying back for what the community is doing for them.
Yeah.
And in that sense, there are a lot of people that we read about in the press, I have to deal with them sometimes, who have never done a stroke in their life and have always been supported by society and have worked out how to do it. And we're not tough in those situations. And by tough, I don't mean being unkind. I mean changing the system so that there is an exchange of energy.
Yeah, waking people up to the fact that they are citizens of the world, you know, and we've got work to do. Yeah, I went to a talk the other week about universal basic income, which is this idea, which there's been a few trials around the world where people, citizens, no matter what their background or economic circumstance, get X amount of dosh per week or per month, just enough, you know, not enough to kind of go buy a few houses, but enough to get by, to kind of relieve the pressure on some people to get by. But also to release the pressure on perhaps slightly better off people who are overworked, overstressed, and doing work, maybe a job that isn't fulfilling to them. So they have the opportunity to step back from that and just kind of think things through. Really fascinating stuff. Obviously, it gets people talking about the whole something for nothing stuff.
Yeah.
But then how many people, you know, in the world that are well off get something for nothing when their parents die, you know, or get inherit four or five houses or X million pounds? That's something for nothing, isn't it? But we judge those people differently. So it's really interesting stuff. And it actually ended up being a bit of a Labour Party thing, which I wasn't aware of when I showed up to the event. But so John McDonnell was speaking at it. And, you know, I think it's well something that is really worth trialling, but people are different, all different people, you know, different characters, aren't they? If I was given £1,000 a month to get by on, I could, you know, I would use that quite wisely, I think, to kind of take stock of things and advance ideas I've got.
Yep.
Another person might do something completely different with it. They might spend it all on alcohol or drugs or who knows what.
Well, they might invest it.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that, would that be a missed opportunity for a government to dish out tough love? Would that be too easy a route for people?
A lot of those ideas about having this universal wage come about because of the concepts of automation.
Yeah.
That there'll be less and less work for people to do. So how do we make sure people are supported?
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to have to do things like that to make sure that things work. You know. Else people won't have any money to buy the things that are being produced by the automated robots.
Oh, all that rubbish that's getting produced for no reason.
Yeah.
Who's going to buy it all?
Yeah.
Big questions, man, isn't it?
Yeah. And I guess that if we've looked a few times at what's happening kind of ecologically and what's happening from an environmental point of view, but that is tough. And the tough love may be that we run out of fish, that we run out of bees, you know, and then there are tough decisions to make about what do we eat and who's allowed to eat what.
Wow, yeah.
So you're forced into tough decisions anyway.
At the moment, or for a long time, planet Earth has been dishing out some tough love. Well, is always dishing out tough love in various different ways, you know, the universe. And it gives us little lessons to learn from.
That's whether we learn from them.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the issue about our own tough love. And by being tough, I don't mean beating yourself up and having a crap time for you. What I mean is facing up to the things that maybe you avoid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may be a bit difficult and a bit tough, but they need to be done.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So at what point do we wait to, or do we, what cues do we look for when we're thinking about dishing out some tough love? Or at what point will you, when you're working with a client, say, right?
Well, I think if I'm working with a client directly, or I'm working with a client about someone that they're working with, you know, like a child or whatever, then the issue is anything changing? You know, we're all being nice and we're supporting each other. Is it leading to any productive outcome? And if it's not, then we need to look at why. And then we need to do, can we increase the love and awareness button? If that doesn't work, do we need to increase the pain and the tough button to make that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. But each of us, I mean, it's easy to become stagnant. You know, why change?
Yep. Yeah. And so you're not afraid as a therapist to, if you reach a certain point, to kind of become angry Mr. Nasty Sean and just kind of...
Well, I am a very tolerant therapist, and I'm kind of known for that.
Are there intolerant therapists?
Yeah, there are. Yeah, there are therapists that will tell you what to do and you must.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have they got a podcast? Have any of them got podcasts?
Yeah, we wouldn't let them. But the thing that comes over in what I do is I will get to a point where my toughness is I will hold up a mirror to the person. And I will show them their reflection of how they actually are.
Yeah.
And some people, when I do that, usually the person...
Literally a mirror, or...?
No, it's an emotional...
You haven't got a mirror down the back of your sofa.
So that's what you look like.
Yeah.
Usually at that point, people will kind of withdraw a bit and get a bit, wow, about it. But virtually every time, I can't think of a time when it hasn't happened, people come back and go, okay, you're right, I know. I can see it now. And then they want to change. But we had to get to that point where I had to be brutally honest with them about how they are and who they are and what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I've got a friend who had a child who at that particular point was just loved kicking off and squealing and squawking for no reason. And she ended up filming the kid, who was, you know, old enough to know what was going on, as they were having this massive meltdown when they were trying to strap him into a car or something like that, into the car seat, and to film them doing this and then showed them back the film, and it was quite effective in making the child realise that, oh, I look like a right idiot.
But I think that that's the point, really, is that when you manage to hold a mirror up effectively, it's like saying, look at your reflection, do you realise what an arsehole you look like now? You know what I mean? Because that's the tough one, and it is tough to do that. It's tough to face it.
Yep.
But if it's the thing that shifts things and makes you change and sort stuff out, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts or anything?
I'll just get you a mirror, hang on.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I look like that. What's your resource?
My resource is, it's like an article. It's on betterhelp.com. And it's about, it says, what do you need to know about tough love? And it's quite good because it goes through all the different sections, but it also talks about you you sorting
tough
you
love
out
on ourselves.
Well.
Yeah, yeah, don't wait for someone else to sort it out.
Yeah, tough love in the workplace, that's a good one.
Ooh.
In here. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, brilliant. And mine's an article too on the theodysseyonline.com. It's tough love advice on tough love for others and yourself. It mentions quite a bit about waking
good.
Up to stuff. So.
Yep.
Cool, alrighty. Have a good week, eh? Back for more next week.
Please note, I am using a recyclable coffee container here.
It's not just recyclable, it's reusable. That should
That's the word.
That should last you a lifetime.
Reusable, it will last me a lifetime.
Is it recyclable?
Yeah.
The tin is. This bit probably isn't.
But I won't need to be recycled because I should use it until I die.
Yeah, and then what
it'll be buried with me.
You can't catch me out. All right, Sean, have a good week.
Okay, and you.
See you next time.
Bye.